I'm Stefan Ango, co-founder of Lumi, and this is Well Made, a show about the intersection of business and design. Today we're talking to Mig Reyes. Mig is a designer and a writer based in Chicago. He's worked for Threadless, 37 Signals, which is now known as Basecamp, and he recently started working at the online fashion company Trunk Club. What I love about Mig is that he's thoughtful, he's outspoken, he's a great writer, and he brings an enthusiasm to that ever-evolving conversation of design's place in business. I hadn't spoken to him in a while before we recorded this episode, so it was a lot of fun to catch up. I hope you enjoy it. Well, thank you very much, Mig Reyes. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stefan, for having me.
So we're catching you at an interesting time. It seems like your fun employment is just about to end.
Coming to a close here, yeah. Summer 2016. It's been a fun one. Just kind of exploring time off. And as you mentioned, I'm starting a new role, really excited about it. I'm going to be joining Trunk Club as a design lead. So I'm pretty thrilled about it. For everyone on the design team at Trunk Club, we're kind of rethinking how are we going to be reshaping the way people shop for clothes. So it's a pretty fun time.
Well, Threadless was a real pioneer in that area because they got started in the early 2000s, right?
Yeah.
And that was way ahead of its time, I think.
For sure. And, you know, I think a lot of Chicago companies just kind of go for it. And we don't really subscribe to business practices or business books or the way other tech industries do it. Threadless was just a side hobby of this guy, Jake Nickel, and a few of his friends. And turned out they started changing the way people think about shopping. And, you know, I think Threadless was one of the first pioneers of crowdsourcing and that whole idea of letting your people and your customers and your fans sort of help you produce the work you sell. And so it's been a fun time here in Chicago for tech and design.
Well, it's come full circle for me because in the very, very beginning of Threadless, I submitted a few of my own designs. None of them got picked for good reason. They were not good, but it was fun. You know, I was just starting as a designer at the time, and there was like a community that had been built around that site that was quite unique online. And just recently, we actually at Lumi started making the packaging for all of the stuff that ships out from Threadless. And it was just like, at least for me, kind of a magical thing of like being an admirer and member of the community to, you know, starting my own thing and helping them somehow today.
Totally.
So, yeah.
And that's what's really fun, you know, for me, witnessing the type of work we do as designers over the last decade. New companies will spruce up like Threadless. And then when you start to run operations, you realize that other companies start to spruce up from trying to solve the problems within running the company, such as how do we offer better packaging? How do we print t-shirts faster? And so you'll start to notice, like even Cards Against Humanity, they're trying to streamline the process of what it's like to offer better packaging and shipping options for, you know, people right. trying to ship their own products. So it's really cool to just see, you know, new companies sprucing up new companies, you know, Kickstarter. Charles Adler is a Chicago guy himself. And, you know, of course, Kickstarter moved to New York. But, you know, look at how many companies Kickstarter helped kick off. And so that's what's exciting about, to me, this industry and why I feel like I think we all will have opportunities for employment for a long time to come, just because our industries change over time rapidly now more than ever. So it's just this kind of fun thrill of being a designer right now, because you never know where our industry is going to go next.
It is something that is quite special, I think, with how fast technology moves. When I came out of design school, the first thing that I did was start Inkodai with my co-founder, Jesse. And I would have never thought that that's my first job out of design school. If you had asked me a few years back, it would have been, you know, maybe I'd go work at some fancy design firm like IDEO or Frog or something like that, where I could do industrial design, or maybe in-house somewhere. But instead, Jesse and I started making dye in buckets, and like it was so grungy and different. And, you know, we used Kickstarter actually in 2009 and again in 2012. But throughout that whole process, all of that stuff was just happenstance. And then the problems that we encountered trying to build a company during that time really informed what we do now. And it's just, I just would have never been able to predict that path.
Totally.
And that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, that's fun, isn't it? Where, you know, I think me myself, I'm a traditionally trained graphic designer, and my path, or at least the path I thought I was supposed to take, was to perhaps join a small design studio, work at a larger agency, work on really cool clients with really big names. And then you realize, no, I'm going to help this t-shirt company out. Or, you know, my other friends who also are graphic designers, now they're all their own entrepreneurs making their own products, designing their own brands for their own things they're selling. And that's sort of a really fun part about design now is that it doesn't just mean making posters or business cards or even websites. Design is kind of shaping everything around us. And it's a really cool, empowering feeling.
So what did you do while you were at Threadless?
So I was at Threadless, I think I joined in early 2009. And at the time, it was still just Jake Nickel and a few of his close friends that had helped build Threadless up. And there was never any formal creative team at the time. And they had just hired a creative director, Sean Donahue, and he started to build out the, you know, Threadless creative team. And so I was their first full-time interactive designer was my title. And even back then, there was no institutionalized titles that we have today, like product designer, UX designer. It was just like, you're a web designer. And whether you came from graphic design background or not, a lot of my responsibilities was doing the marketing campaigns, a lot of the fun promotional graphics, and at the same time, working on interfaces for the Threadless.com site for, you know, the voting system, for user profiles, all of that stuff. You kind of just got thrown into the fire without any formal UX experience. It's just, hey, we have stuff to make, and we're making it for our customers and the people that love Threadless. So let's figure this stuff out. So basically all the work for marketing and user interface for Threadless.com.
Yeah, wearing a lot of hats.
Yeah, and you know, as a young designer, you kind of just relish those opportunities to just make a ton of stuff. And it was very rogue back then. You know, I don't think anybody on the Threadless creative team at the time had formal official user experience backgrounds. And so for us, it was just like, hey, does this thing that we click feel right? Does it make sense? And you know, also how's the type being set? And so this sort of brings me to this thing that I've been passionate about lately, especially in design and tech today, is sort of the merging of what it means to design with both brand and product in mind. A lot of my friends now, or at least my generation of friends as designers, since we didn't have formal, you know, product design backgrounds, we all just learned how to do this stuff as graphic designers. And so you kind of get thrown into the mix. And what I realized is that, you know, things like Threadless and Basecamp, which is another place I worked at, without formal UX training, it's not a knock or a ding or a disservice to your product. It's actually just a fresh perspective and a different perspective on building interfaces for people to use. And so it's been a fun journey and learning experience getting thrown right into the tech and digital worlds, being a traditionally trained print designer.
Well, I think especially when you're talking about companies like Threadless and Trunk Club, where there's a physical component to the whole experience.
Totally.
You have to sort of think about that. And I think oftentimes it breaks down when in companies those two things are not talking to each other, because, you know, let's take Trunk Club, for example. Trunk Club is helping people connect with basically like a personal stylist that's going to send them clothes that look good or fit their style. And so there's an onboarding experience that is on the web, but that onboarding experience continues when you receive your first box and continues after that. And so there's really no distinction between the product in quotes that you experience on the web and the one that you start to experience once you receive the clothes, right?
Yeah, you totally nailed it. I think for businesses like Trunk Club and Threadless to succeed, every touch point that a customer sees, every piece of communication, every interaction with customer service or a stylist, that's all part of their designed experience. And from beginning to end and for their next shipment and their shipment after that, design has to be a part of that conversation. And design has a really great opportunity to say, this is what the customer gets to feel when they purchase clothes from Trunk Club. This is how our customers will feel like their better selves, even if it's just using our iOS app or, you know, signing up on a website. Every little part, every nook and cranny, design gets to shape that. And I think that's why now more than ever, there's, I think, a massive gold rush for those who work in design. And at least in Chicago, I know more people trying to hire designers than I do designers looking for work. So it's a good time to be alive as a designer, I guess you could say.
I really gravitate towards that idea of cohesiveness. You know, I run a lot of the design and technology stuff at Lumi, but my self-proclaimed title is head of cohesiveness, because I feel like the real important thing is, does the experience that we give people across all media feel like one thing? And it's not just about the branding. It's not just about the colors and the typefaces and stuff like that, but it's also how you speak to people. It's the copywriting, it's the photography, it's the, of course, it's the visual language that you use, but it's the overall feel and what it means to be, you know, a Lumi or a Trunk Club experience, right?
Totally. Design is really every business's differentiator. And one thing I think is really important to say, or at least what I feel pretty strongly about, is, you know, there's popular conversation going on that design needs a seat at the table, design should do this, design needs to be that. And I worry a little bit when we start to put all these declaratives on what design needs to be. And really, I encourage everyone to take a step back and go, design is not the maker of shots. Design is not the people that says, this is what we do, this is what we make. Design is the vehicle to help business go. And I really want companies to not think of design as like a role to fill in your company, but more as like an investment to say, all of my design team is going to help my customers understand what we're doing. Design is there to be everybody's friend on marketing, on finance, on engineering. That's how I really feel like the role of design is. Not, you know, this head honcho at the main table, but really everyone's friend and every department's friend to say, hey, let me smooth out our communication. Let me make sure that this experience from beginning to end feels, like you said, cohesive. And, you know, that's what I hope for in our industry, is just more of an acceptance that design is, you know, a vehicle for everyone else's business objectives, instead of, okay, we need an app and it needs to look like this, and we need a brand and it needs to feel like that. Even engineering or marketing, like any department, it's dangerous to talk about things in very prescriptive ways, when I think really what I'm passionate about these days is building bridges and, you know, being a communication lubricant in a way between all different departments of any given business, because they're not pieces of a machine that, like, it takes everybody in a village to make a great experience, you know, from engineering to design to, you know, customer service to, you know, the warehouse folks. If you're, you know, shipping, packaging real products, design is a big helper of every department. So that's sort of how I feel about our role as designers, is, you know, we need to help the company, and we don't need to be so declarative on what design needs to be. We're here to help and smooth things out for everybody.
Well, explain what you mean a little bit about the declarative thing. It seems to me like you have a specific idea of what that means to you, or what you're seeing out there that doesn't fit that definition of trying to smooth things out and work across disciplines.
For sure. So, I mean, we talked about earlier how it's an exciting time to be a designer. There's so many opportunities for designers to find work, so many opportunities for design to fit within an organization. But as design becomes more of an accepted industry or an accepted type of occupation, now there are, you know, experts in the field that are saying and teaching and writing all sorts of ways to be a designer. I think you'll see it all over Medium and different popular design publications. Designers must code. Designers, you know, must learn these things. Designers must understand the principles of visual design and must understand the principles of UX design for them to succeed. Designers must write. So in a way, as exciting as it is to be a designer, it's also overwhelming, because we're apparently being told that we need to do everything also at the same time. So for me, I don't have answers on this. I'm just curious on, where do we draw the lines on the role of a designer in an organization? Or is it, you know, someone that can wear many hats and float through different groups within an organization? So it's a fun, sticky topic. And I don't have answers. I'm just more curious what the rest of, you know, your listeners think, and what you think on what is the role of design, and why do we need to write more articles on if we should code or not? Can we instead change the conversation to, what are the tools that I should know to do my job to the best of my abilities? And I wish the conversation was more like that, instead of saying you must be a coder to work in tech as a designer. So again, it's just like there's so many rules, and I've never really subscribed to rules. And I think it's a very Midwest mentality. If you take a look at the companies that I've been lucky enough to work at, like Threadless, like 37 Signals and like Trunk Club even, there's industry rules and then there's people that just go, I don't necessarily agree with them. We're going to try it our way. And so it's definitely a button that gets pressed on my end whenever designers say, you need to do X, Y, and Z for you to succeed.
I tend to reject strong commandments like that, no matter what they are. I'm just, there's always more nuance to it than that. And so I tend to get a little suspicious or skeptical. I'm always the contrarian. I'm always looking at that and I'm like, is that really true? I'm not sure.
Totally. And maybe like everything I just said isn't actually true at all. It just, maybe I have more of a gripe with the way people write on the internet today. It could be just, you know, I think.
Clickbait.
Yeah, totally. It's like, you know, and I'm guilty of writing these types of pieces too, just because I'm very passionate about a certain thing a particular day. And then, you know, a year later, my mind will totally change. But the older I get and the more, you know, tenured I become in my career, the less answers I seem to have and the more questions I seem to have. And now, just like you, I'm a little more curious on what I read on the internet. And yeah, I find everything suspect when I'm being told this is the law of the land in design.
I think once you generally define your company or your project as something where design really matters, it's something that you try to instill into everyone in the company. And so the opinions, like once those people on your team, and they can be at any level of the company, start to appreciate and recognize the kind of level of taste and experience that you're looking for, the ideas can really come from anywhere. So it's not necessarily that designers need to do everything, but rather the opposite, that maybe everyone needs to have a little bit more of a designer hat that they put on sometimes and ask themselves, like, does this fit with the general direction of the company?
I love that point you brought up, and it's something I totally resonate with. And it's something I've been lucky enough to see at 37signals/Basecamp. Whenever we built features at Basecamp, all of the engineers and all the programmers have their say in how it should function, how it should feel. Design and engineering weren't such like yin and yang separated type of roles. It's a very collaborative process at Basecamp where we talk about an issue or a feature rather together, and we sort of design what it's supposed to be together. And of course, on the same token, the designers get to have input on how we structure this, how it works into the grand system of Basecamp or whatever product it is that we happen to be working on that day. But to make a shorter point, you're right. I think design input can come from everybody, and I think it should come from everybody so that you get diversity in thought and diversity in perspective. And, you know, that sort of touches on one other like topic I feel pretty strongly about is, you know, we talk about diversity in our jobs a lot, but too often it's just secluded to diversity in race and diversity in gender. But I think to build really great experiences, you need diversity in perspective and diversity in thought and diversity in, you know, just backgrounds of people. And so, yeah, I think design is a principle that everybody can own and nurture and grow and practice in a company, whether you're on the finance team or, you know, you help on customer service. I think everybody has some sort of design-driven sensibilities. They just were perhaps never formally trained on it. And, you know, we believed in that a lot at Basecamp and at Threadless, that great feedback comes from everywhere. And it's that feedback that shapes the design of the iterations we do next. So totally great point.
Yeah, I think that at Lumio, we're lucky. We're small enough still that, you know, we all get to work in one building. You know, our meetings usually take place in the fulfillment warehouse area. So that, you know, everybody, whether they're a designer, an engineer, you know, working on sales, working on, you know, marketing, all sort of gets together in the warehouse. And that's just because that's just like the place where we have the biggest table. But what's cool about that is that unexpected problems get solved. Some cross-pollination occurs there because someone will say like, oh, I'm having trouble with the postal service for this or that reason. And suddenly someone on the engineering team pipes up and says, oh, I think I can solve that. Or have you thought of this? And there's just no reason a good idea can't come from a different division, so to speak, even though at our company, most divisions are one or two people.
Oh, absolutely. And as I think about how I hope my career evolves and how I hope my design career takes shape in the years to come, I'm thinking a lot about design leadership these days. And what does it mean to be a leader in design, or what does it mean to be a good steward of design? And one thing that I think you know, could be an expectation of someone that is a good design leader or practices design leadership is to encourage everyone around you to think more in design problem thinking styles. To me, great design leadership encourages the people around you to think about a problem critically and to have critical discourse on the work that we do. And so, you know, that is encouraging the engineers to help you think through a design and to make them feel safe to talk about design, even though it may not be their traditionally, you know, trained background and not their day-to-day, you know, role or responsibilities. But I think it's a healthy and responsible thing for someone who hopes to lead and steward good design and good process to bring everyone up with you and, you know, to encourage good feedback from all parts of the organization. And, you know, I think when you start to encourage more voices and help people feel like they are a part of the design process, you just end up making way better things.
Tell me about your work at the company formerly known as 37 Signals. A lot of people will be familiar with 37 Signals, which is now called Basecamp. But for those who aren't, it's a very opinionated company. Several great books have come out of the team as a whole. You know, obviously Jason Fried, the founder, and David Hanmeyer Hansen, both are fairly outspoken. But it's an unusual company, and I'm curious, you know, what it was like working there and some of the things you might have learned there.
For sure. I have to thank Jason Fried a hell of a lot for the opportunity he gave me to work there for 4 years. And I really think it's so far been some of the best 4 years of my career. Hopefully, as I roll into Trunk Club, that's going to continue. But Jason really took a chance on me and really everyone that works there because he looks for people that are different from the mold, you know, different types of thinkers, people that really love writing, people that really care about building a company that everyone wants to work at, in addition to a really great product. So I don't think I got to tell this story before, but when I was in my third year at Threadless, my creative director pulled me aside one day for a coffee and he said, "Mig, I'm not going to be your boss right now. I'm going to be your friend. You know, I don't think you should be working on t-shirts for the rest of your life." And so Sean Donahue, my creative director at the time, essentially gave me a license to look for a new job because he wanted me to grow. He wanted me to kind of spread my wings a little bit. And so the first thing I did was went to the 37 Signals job board and I started browsing for new design jobs in Chicago. And the only one that stuck out to me was a UI designer position at Braintree. It's a Chicago-based company. And I looked at all of their clients. Clients include GitHub, 37 Signals. And so I thought to myself, oh, I happen to know Jason Fried. He lives in my city. We've met at like industry events before. I'm going to shoot him a quick email. So I did. And I said, "Hey, Jason, can you get me a foot in the door at Braintree? I'm trying to get a job there." And this was probably like a Monday night. Like an hour later, he wrote me back and said, "Yeah, I could get you a foot in the door at Braintree, but I'd be irresponsible not to ask. Would you rather just work here instead?" And so we sort of talked about what it would be like for someone like me to join the company. And, you know, Jason had expressed, "We're looking to bring more perspectives on design. We'd love to up our art and, you know, creative side of things." And I think even back then, it was shared opinion that it is an opinionated company. And they didn't want it to be Jason and David's company anymore. They wanted it to be 37 Signals and the shared company that, you know, the brilliantly talented people that work there are making together. And so it was a great time for all of us when I started there in like 2012. And so I joined as a designer, like no specific role or title other than, you know, help out on our marketing campaigns and our marketing projects. I got to, you know, on the side, figure out how to code from really world-class engineers. And practicing code, I got to start dabbling on features and some product work. And over the course of the 4 years I was there, it was a very fun, fluid design role to just really touch and work on anything that helps Basecamp grow as a company and to make our products and our stuff better. So in, you know, short terms, I was a marketing-based designer that led a lot of marketing projects, whether it's the redesign of Basecamp.com, A-B tests for Basecamp.com, and then working on consumer and marketing related features in Basecamp, such as introducing the annual plan because Basecamp for a long time was only a monthly subscription, and just doing a lot of work that sort of helped the bottom line, customer retention, customer acquisition, and stuff I got to learn on the job. You know, I'm a graphic designer. I didn't know about any of this stuff. I had never A-B tested anything at Threadless at that time. So Jason and David have built this great company where you really just go through this boot camp. I really felt like it was this master's program, 4 years of just really understanding from bottom to top what it's like to make a product and then sell that product and then support that product. Because every single person that works at the company runs a support shift. at least once a month to answer customer emails and help out the support team. And so it was just really great experience of feeling like you were shaping the company, because you literally had to touch every part of it, from making the product to making the marketing for the product. So it was great. It was a hell of an experience. And I think it really shaped me and my understanding of how design can impact an organization. And that's the kind of mentality and the excitement I hope to bring to Trunk Club.
I'm curious, just for my own edification, I've listened to Jason Fried talk about some of the interesting policies that they have there, whether, you know, like you mentioned, working customer service or working 4 days a week during summer, certain policies around vacations and working remote. There's a lot of interesting policies that you had there, but I always hear them from Jason, and I'm curious to hear them from you, because what was it like on the receiving end?
So let me set the record straight. As a former employee of 37 Signals and Basecamp, the stuff in Rework and the blog posts are, drumroll, true. So I never sat in a meeting that we didn't need to have. And if we did have a meeting, it wasn't a meeting. It was like, hey, come into this room and help me think through this design. It was never about planning schedules or, you know, any of the agency kind of meetings that you might experience. We definitely only worked 4 days a week for 5 months out of the year, which I'm totally going to miss in the rest of my career. And yeah, you know, despite the fact that it's a Chicago-based company, there's probably only 10 people at the time I worked there that lived in Chicago, and the other, you know, 35 coworkers were all around the world. So my 4 years at Basecamp, I didn't actually go into the office every day. And in fact, most of us never went into the office every day. I actually like coffee shop hopping and working out of other cities where my friends are in. So it was a really awesome opportunity to do some of my best work of my career in other cities and different coffee shops, to explore my own city. All that stuff is totally true. I was super curious myself, because I had read Rework before I joined the company. And I'm like, I want to know how accurate these really sexy, punchy ideas are. And like, these books are, you know, hot topics in the industry. And, you know, I want to know how it holds up and stacks up to the truth. And it turns out it was actually pretty accurate.
That's good. I feel like you've been brainwashed. I can't trust you.
No, totally, man. I promise you. We were not paid to pitch and pimp out the ideas that they wrote. You know, I think they truly are trying to say fuck you to the industry, and to say you don't have to run your employees into the ground. You don't have to do it, you know, the way the rest of the industry does. And I think it's a testament to them on how they hire.
Yeah, that's my question. Do you have to be a certain kind of person able to work with that system?
Absolutely, because there's people that have come and gone through Basecamp. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there are people that have joined the company and perhaps shortly after left because it just wasn't a cultural fit. You have to be pretty independent. You have to be responsible. You know, we don't have project managers. Every designer and programmer manage their own projects together. And then, of course, Jason and David would help swoop in and offer feedback and make sure things are moving along. But you have to be pretty resourceful on your own. And it does take a certain type of personality to be able to work at a company where you don't see coworkers all the time. And so you have to find your camaraderie in other ways. And I think a lot of people around the company worked at co-working spaces. I was fortunate enough to live in Chicago, so I could go to the office if I needed to see my coworkers. But it does take a certain type of worker to work independently of physical space. And so it's a tough thing, and that's why they don't hire a lot and they don't hire often. But also, you don't see people quitting often either. It's a pretty tight family over there. And I miss everybody I work with, and they're all still really good friends of mine. But, you know, as the company grows, I think they're still going to need to look for that kind of individual who can just really run their own projects and manage their own plate, because it's that kind of company.
You know, it's interesting, because there's an experimental nature to trying things like that, because that's not how other companies work. And there's no rule book except the one that that they're writing at Basecamp now for how you do this. And on my end, I've tried, you know, with my business partner and co-founder, Jesse, we've experimented with some of those things, and some of them work really well. And we've come up with our own ideas, and sometimes they didn't work, and we had to pull the plug on an idea and, you know, scrap it and say, never mind, that was a bad idea.
But here's,
did that happen?
Well, here's the thing. You're still in business, and so is Basecamp. And I think that's the thing that companies tend to lose sight on, is it's scary to experiment if you don't picture what it looks like, you know, 5, 10 years down the road. And If you don't remind yourself that you'd like to be a company that exists for another decade, another 2 decades, then it helps you think, okay, if we try this experiment for 2 months, 3 months, and we totally screw it up, what's 3 months out of a 10-year span? You know what I mean? And so you have to take a step back and think, let's try this, because at the end of the day, we could always go back to what we did before. And if we don't try new things as a company, we're not going to grow the company. And I think it's funny that as designers and engineers, we talk about iteration. We talk about experimentation. We got to try new things in our product to push the product. Well, one thing that we really believed in at Basecamp was that your company is also the product. You know, there's a lot of people that are just fans of Basecamp and our opinions. And so they end up buying Basecamp or subscribing to Basecamp because of the opinions we shared. But that in a sense, like, is your product as well. Your company is the thing that people are really subscribing to. So if you're not iterating on the company, you're not growing the company, you're not advancing the company. And so for Basecamp, it was just kind of a no-brainer. Treat the company as a product itself, because this is the thing that we care about. This is the thing we are equally building together as a unit of 45 plus people. Why shouldn't we be trying new things? Why shouldn't we go out of our comfort zone for a shot at being a better company? And that's why we just shared everything we tried. And, you know, there's a lot of things that didn't work out and a lot of things that do. And, you know, you tend to just hear about all the stuff that does work out. But, you know, I think it's okay. And there's all these talks on TED and, you know, different blog posts about failing and failing fast. Why aren't people doing it at their companies and creating and designing, you know, cultural experiences and organizational experiences? This is all part of design as well. And, you know, I'm not sure why it's not more widely accepted, but for the companies that do that, I hope you enjoy long tenure for all the employees that you get to keep, because, you know, this is how you let your employees who have been there with you for 5-10 years feel like they're growing, because it's always going to be different. I think that's why people leave for a different job. They need something different or new. And so if you want to hold on to employees for a long time, maybe you should think of your company as a product too.
Are there experiments that you can think of or talk about that didn't work out?
Yeah, I guess so. When I first started, one of the first summers, I think we were pretty inspired by the Google 20% time. Mm-hmm. And so we took an entire month off of doing main Basecamp work or main 37 signals work at the time to really just flex and practice our skills on totally different projects that could potentially help the company. And so instead of 20% time, we kind of just like spent a month doing that. And at the end of the month, we had a pitch day where we'd pitch all the projects. And so I guess it wasn't really a failure. It was just a intentionally carved out time to create things that we knew weren't going to work out. For example, me and the video producer, we made some fun video ads that never aired anywhere. We just shared it with the company. Other people built a live chat feature in Basecamp 2, and that never shipped. So, you know, for us, it just felt like R&D in a lab. And, you know, we spent a month of the company salaries to practice and experiment. And ultimately, most of the stuff never shipped. So I guess, in a way, that's sort of something that quote unquote didn't work. But we knew going in that, you know, these are pitches, not projects. What was great about Basecamp is that everything felt safe to try and do, and no one felt like we could get in trouble. And so I think it takes a really long time for you to build an organization where all of the employees feel that way. But I can't honestly sit here and think of anything that felt like a failure. It just, the spirit of experimentation was welcomed and encouraged. And so we tried different things like employee outings, or where several different people from several different teams would fly to one city and stay there for a week and just work together. No huge projects might have come out of that, but we definitely bonded together, and it probably cost the company some money. But, you know, other than that, everything is on the table for trying. And I think, again, you kind of have to credit Jason and David for being willing to spend money on their employees to say, try new shit. We want you to be happy. And we're not going to always be around, because we have our own kids and our own families. So, like, whatever it is I could do to keep my employees happy, go for it. Just don't run the company into the ground.
Yes. I love all that. My question, though, is what led to, I guess, your decision to move on from Basecamp?
Well, there's two things at play. One, I have work ADD, and so I can't sit on the same thing for too long. So for me, I just wanted a different challenge of not working on project management software for another 4 years. Again, the company and the environment was insanely amazing, but I kind of just wanted to try something different and to see what else was out there. And the other thing is I'm super extroverted. I'm really talkative. I can meet anybody. And so after 4 years of not being around a lot of people or not having a bigger team dynamic, not having bigger teams to collaborate on the same projects with, I think that was, for me, when I decided I think I might need to try something different. Because on one hand, yes, they hire people that can run their own projects and basically handle their own workload, which is great. And you can get collaboration, but you have to ask for it. And it's not a knock. It's just a very efficient model for Basecamp. But for me, being very extroverted, wanting to be around teams, around people, I kind of just crave that. And I, you know, there wasn't a track for me to build a big brand or marketing team because it's a company of individuals. So for me, I just decided, you know, the only way I'm going to grow myself and learn some new stuff is if I leave. And, you know, what better time to leave when you're at a really great place in your career and you feel like you're very confident in what you're doing. So that's sort of why I left.
There was an article that came out just this past week about the head of Google Ventures who just left. And his quote, I loved it, was like, everything's going great, so that's why I'm leaving.
Yeah, no, and I totally subscribe to that idea because I think I could endlessly A-B test the Basecamp.com marketing page. But at the end of the day, I don't think Basecamp needs that much more help being sold. It's in the long tail of its company cycle. And people know about it. People are already coming to Basecamp without even Google searching project management software. So they're in a really fortunate position where people sort of know it and sales are better than ever. And the company had been growing year after year since I've been there. So that's the other reason I decided maybe it is time for me to try something different. You know, I want to take what I've learned at Threadless and Basecamp and bring it to organizations that haven't had that maturity in their design program or the organization of design within the company. So that, to me, is sort of why I wanted to leave, was take everything I've learned in this almost master's degree feeling experience at Basecamp and offer it to, you know, a new company or new companies.
Feel free to share and not share any of it, but in your process of finding some place to work, were those habits that you've built or desires that you have from everything that we've been talking about in this conversation of trying to be involved in a lot of different areas of a company, was that challenging when you went out and looked for a job?
Oh, for sure. So the job I got after Basecamp, I wasn't actually at for too long. I joined a startup in Chicago called Talk. And again, an amazing team, but it was a huge shift in culture for me because I'm used to working remotely on my own, managing my own projects. And here I am in an early startup where, you know, everybody's grinding together and there's a lot of things that need to get done. And so I think I was just a little out of my element for a little bit. And, you know, I was just focused on just a few certain projects. So that was tough. And so, you know, I realized maybe I should take a little more time off and reassess what I want out of my career. And so I took more time off. And during Trunk Club's interviews, I was interviewing at other companies, and they're all for very specific roles. And I think a lot of big companies, they're not looking for generalists right now. They're looking for people that have very specific titles, like senior product lead or, you know, product designer for X, Y, and Z. And me, having loved enjoying every part of working on a company and product, it was hard for me to find something that I could really slide into well. And so Trunk Club happened to be it because there's a lot of opportunity to bring cohesion to all the design teams together. And that's sort of the role I was able to carve out for myself, just because I want to help a company grow in a lot of different ways. And for me, what's going to give me satisfaction is interfacing with all the teams, not just one team. And so again, short answer, yeah, it's hard when you're used to working in on all parts of a business as a designer and then looking for work and the roles are very tightly scoped. It was a hell of a challenge for sure. And that's why it took me all of the summer to find my next role.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. I can't wait to see what comes out of it. And, you know, you mentioned it in different places online, but in joining Basecamp, you still were you. You know, you were sharing your writing and other stuff online. And I really hope that continues because I'd love to see more of the inside of Trunk Club and like how your thoughts evolve, especially as, you know, you bring this heritage of all these interesting thoughts and ideas that came from different companies into something that's, you know, been around for a couple of years and may or may not be resistant to change. I'm curious.
I think you bring a really great point, which is one of the biggest reasons I wanted to join 37 Signals at the time. because I had been interviewing at a few different companies after Threadless. I almost moved out to New York to join a, you know, a very popular tech company out in Brooklyn. There were other opportunities, but with 37 Signals, like, never you mind the cachet it had in the industry, Jason made me feel like he wanted to hire Mig, not hire another senior designer. And that was super important to me, that I felt like he was celebrating the individual and that he was bringing a unique personality to the team that could really shine and grow themselves and bring themselves to the table. And I think the companies I really admire, there are individuals at that company that can feel like they're themselves, that can have their own unique voice, but still be an ambassador for their company. People like Cap Watkins comes to mind, where he writes about design management, but he's VP of design at BuzzFeed, which has many designers. And I really respect when companies allow their individuals to really feel like they could be their own voice, but at the same time, they're amplifying essentially the voice of their own company in doing so. So that was huge for me and why I joined 37 Signals, because I wanted to be me. I didn't want to be senior designer number four. I wanted to be Mig Reyes. And I wanted to, you know, continue to write and flex all those things that I'd been practicing throughout my career. And that was the thing Jason said when he wrote a blog post about me joining. And, you know, he does that for every new employee. He writes why he hired them. And he said, you know, I appreciate Mig's blossoming writing skills, his passion for the community. And that meant a lot to me. And it made me feel like an individual in a company and not an employee at a company.
Yeah. There's something special going on in Chicago, I feel. Whenever I'm there, you know, and the companies that I know there are all really interesting. You mentioned Cards Against Humanity, obviously 37 Signals. There's energy there that's quite unusual, I feel.
Yes, yes, totally. And I am loud and proud Chicago. If anyone listening wants to visit Chicago, please email me. I will send you to all the best restaurants and bars to check out. I will help you take tours of all the cool companies here in Chicago, because we are very proud of what we do. And I think in Chicago and the Midwest in general, there's this sense of humility, which is great, and I love it. But also, I think sometimes we're so humble that we never speak up about the cool shit we're doing. Because you take a look at East Coast and West Coast, everyone there is confident and proud of the work they're doing. And this is why you always read about the coastal companies. Here in the Midwest, it's sort of just like roll your sleeves up, get work done. But you take a look deeper and you'll see companies, like you said, Cards Against Humanity, 37 Signals / Basecamp, Threadless, Braintree, Kudal Partners, which does Field Notes. My entire career is shaped by Chicago culture and Chicago workplaces. And if you take a look at my resume, I've basically worked at the places in Chicago that I've really admired. And Chicago is also supportive of that. We love when people move to Chicago and vice versa. When my friends leave Chicago, the first thing they tell me is, man, we miss the culture and community. We miss just designers going out, but not talking about design. We miss people just like really supporting each other and pushing each other to, you know, find their next role or, you know, make the city a stronger, more united one. But yeah, there's almost a chip on our shoulders where, you know, we want to be considered a world-class city for design, and you want to sleep on us, that's fine, but we're still going to do cool shit. And again, even Trunk Club is a Chicago-based company, and everyone at Trunk Club and all the places I've gotten to meet or work at, it's all the same. It's like, we know we do world-class work, and it's always fun when people go, oh, wait, I thought you were New York-based, or, oh, wait, I didn't know you guys were in Chicago. And the other thing, like just getting down to brass tacks, is Chicago is a very cheap city to live in comparison to New York or San Francisco. And so when you can make close to industry salary, but have like a fraction of the cost of living, it's not surprising anymore why people are moving to Chicago and trying to find work in Chicago, because there is a lot of exciting opportunity here. And it's a city that is affordable. It's a city of great people. It's a city of, you know, nurturing and a hell of a lot of good food too. So...
Well, thank you very much for sharing all your wisdom. And people should go to your site, your Twitter, mig.io, read your articles. I hope you keep posting some. People like this podcast, they'll probably love Humble Pied, which was your fun little side project for a little while where you interviewed all kinds of legendary design-y folks. So people should check that out. What else?
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it. Let's just be friends on the internet and visit Chicago, and I will convince you to move here.